This evening to the Gospel of Matthew. The Gospel of Matthew, we'll read beginning at chapter 4, verse 23, and we'll read through verse 16 of chapter 5. Matthew 4, beginning at verse 23. This is early. And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And his fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought unto him all sick people that were taken with divers diseases and torments, and those which were possessed with devils, and those which were lunatic, and those that had the palsy, and he healed them. And there followed him great multitudes of the people from Galilee, and from Decapolis, and from Jerusalem, and from Judea, and from beyond Jordan. And he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice, be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. We read this far in God's holy and inspired verses 3 through 9 of chapter 5. Matthew 5, 3 through 9. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall be filled. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. These verses, beloved, are the text that the elders have chosen, the council has chosen for our theme verses for family visitation this year. And family visitation is when the elders in the church visit each of the families annually, inquiring into. Tonight I preach these verses also as a moment of the Lord's Supper. Now it's quite a big chunk to preach in one sermon. In fact, the text is verses 1 through 12 for family visitation, but I've just selected 3 through 9 for the sermon. And ordinarily, so in some way, this is going to be an overview of the passage and an introduction. I think it will be beneficial, especially because it helps think about the Beatitudes and how to study them and read them. Quite appropriately, these expressions here have been called Beatitudes. And that's what Jesus is describing here. Blessedness. Like. Life is. Now, this morning, and we saw that it can be understood and should be understood from two points of view. First of all, the point of view blesses us. God gifts us. This morning, with the forgiveness of sins. But then also, experience. And so this morning, the blessing, the joy of the forgiveness of sins, the relief of the burden of our sin being lifted from us. And by the word blessed should be in our mind as attitudes to us, God's grace to us. In fact, in each of these Beatitudes, you see that twice. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Being poor in spirit is a blessing from God. And theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Another blessing from God. But there's a double blessing in each of the Beatitudes. But they also describe lasting happiness, joy, and peace. For blessed from God. God blesses us with being poor in spirit, and those who mourn and are meek, and so on. And God blesses us with the kingdom of heaven, and being comforted, and inheriting the earth, and so on. And we experience our life. So this evening we want to look at these verses under the theme, the Beatitude of Blessing. The Beatitudes, a life of blessings. First, we have some principles of application, how to understand the application of these Beatitudes to us. Then second, we have marks of grace, because even as we say God of His grace, at the same time it's a mark that shows itself. And then third, that's how each of them end us of further blessing. First, principles of application. Second, marks of grace of blessing. Principles of application. The sermon is applicatory as we leave the sacrament. So we ask, how do the Beatitudes apply to us? How do the Beatitudes apply to us? And there are four principles that help us to read the Beatitudes in such a way. Application. The first of them is that the Beatitudes describe for us every Christian. Is not describing here a group of exceptional Christians. He's not saying here that there are some Christians who are poor in spirit, there are some Christians who mourn, there are some Christians who are meek, there are some which hunger and thirst after righteousness, some are merciful, some which are pure, some are persecuted, and they especially are the Christians. That's not what Jesus is saying here. He's speaking here to all Christians, to all believers. There's not, and we shouldn't think of it this way, there's not an ordinary group of Christians, extraordinary spiritual group. Now, sometimes there are things in the church and in the history of the church that create this kind of misunderstanding. So, for example, These terms are used, laity and clergy. Offices in the church, different functions that God has given in the church. But we shouldn't think of it this way, that the clergy are a group of extra spiritual people, different class of Christians than the think of as an ordinary group. Or there's the error of Pentecostalism, which teaches that so there's the gift of that all Christians have, but then there's a gift that some have, which is the gift of the Spirit. It's true that the Holy Spirit measures out spiritual gifts differently to different members in the of the Spirit that every believer has. So you go and look at Galatians 5, which speaks of love, joy, peace, temperance, long-suffering. These are gifts of every Christian. Or you think in 1 Corinthians chapters 12 through 14, where the Apostle speaks of the gifts. There's three gifts. And participates in these, receives these. And that's true here. Every one of these to describe every one of us. Thing that I want to say. Not only is there not two groups of Christians, some that maybe we think of as more spiritual than others, but the apostle also who are poor in spirit, some and so on. Right? He's saying that these attributes, all these attributes, all of these to a greater or lesser degree in every Christian. And that's because these belong together. For example, you cannot be a peace without being meek. You will not be pure in heart unless you mourn over your sin. The one who is merciful, that means he's poor in spirit. And so these differ each other, and they should and will be present to some extent child of God. The third thing that we should understand is that none of these describe natural tendencies. That is, these blessings that are described here in the Beatitudes are produced by the work of God in the life of the regenerate, the and you see, this is the wonder of conversion and salvation. Understand this. God will take the person and bring him to know that he's nothing. God will take the person and make him pliable before the Word. And where God is, then, no believer hides behind a personality to justify his sin. Blessings worked by the Spirit in the hearts of God's people. And that's the principle. The Beatitudes, the fundamental difference fundamental difference, Christian. The main difference between faith and unbelief. What's for Jesus Christ to be seeks to emulate the kind of person that we want to be, that the believer seeks in his life. Described here in the are despised to be poor in spirit, over that the world considers esteem. To be meek, the world says, don't be meek. Advocates the opposite, doesn't it? To be a peacemaker. Battle, they say, not by being peacemaking, but by standing up. The antithesis, isn't it? It's that distinguish the believer from the world. And I said this last, it out, is that we've highlighted here from 2 points. Distinguishes the kingdom of heaven. Chapter 4, verse 23, he began preaching the gospel of the kingdom. Simultaneously, this world and the citizens of the two kingdoms live alongside each other. The citizens of the one kingdom answer to Christ. Well, man or self. And the one is a kingdom of anarchy and independence. The other is a kingdom in which the citizens are ruled. That distinguish those who are ruled by the from those who are citizens of the kingdom of darkness. And that is that the great difference between us and the world is not much in what we do and don't do. That's not the antithesis. And an unbeliever, is the work of God's Spirit and grace that we are changed. If as believers we're concerned about holiness, about good works, about being a light of darkness, about being the salt of the earth, then our concern isn't going to be attitude on all things that stems from a changed heart. You see, external Christianity, moralism, legalism is quite easy. And when you live that way, you can tick the boxes and you feel quite good about yourself, especially as Jesus describes the Pharisees, live comparatively. Just looking at other people, I'm not like this man, I'm not like that one. I do this and I do that, and I haven't done this and I haven't done that. Jesus says, no, your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. And that's what we see here in these characteristics, these marks of grace. God has blessed us, and God blesses us by His grace to shape us into these things, but these then become the marks that distinguish. And we're not going to look at them individually, although I'll say something about each of them, but what I want to do is think about them in here. The first four describe the believer from an internal point of view. There are seven of them that we're looking at here. And then the last describe the believer from an external point of view. The first four describe him in character, the last in his relationships. The first four in his attitudes, the last, or perhaps the first four describe him as he stands before God in relation to God, and the last three as he stands in his relationships to his fellow man. And so the first four marks of grace, how we stand in our character and in our relationship to God. Internal. Blessed are the poor in spirit. The poor in spirit. That is to have a submissive spirit. A spirit that bows before God. A spirit that stoops low. Expressed well in the words of the returning prodigal to his, I am not worthy to be one of thy hired servants. And the opposite is to have a proud spirit that manifests itself in rebellion and disobedience. The one who is poor in spirit has a humble, teachable spirit. James says of this one that he is swift to hear and slow to speak and slow to wrath. That this one, when he comes to hear the word, receives with meekness the engrafted word which is able to save your soul. A submissive, teachable, stooping spirit. Second, they that mourn, blessed are they. A further description of the first one, because this one who has a poverty in spirit is conscious of before God, and he mourns. He mourns before God over his sin. That's the idea here. And we see the paradox of the Christian mind. The paradox, at least from a worldly point of view. Blessed, happy, are they that mourn. And yet the Scriptures is telling us that here, in the awareness of our sin, even in mourning over our sin, in what Psalmist describes in Psalm 6 this way, watering our couch with our tears, in that is blessedness. We saw that this morning. Blessed is the one whose iniquity, whose sin is covered. Blessed are they that mourn. Then third, from an internal point of view, from the point of the one who is blessed, blessed are the meek. Now meekness is not the same as weakness. Rather, meekness is a proper fear of God, a proper consciousness of who God is and who I am before God. A proper consciousness of my dependence on God, which results in not weakness, but confidence, strength, so that the one who is meek is one who has a controlled spirit. The one who is meek has a quiet rest in the sovereignty of God. The one who is meek is not retaliatory or provocative, but he lives before God. He's one who commits his way to the Lord and he trusts in him. Psalm 34 describes the meek. Looking at these Beatitudes as marks of grace, the fourth internal one that's mentioned here is that the blessed are those who have an insatiable hunger for righteousness. They hunger and they thirst after righteousness. Now, righteousness is, first of all, our justification, our being right with God. But what this is describing is not the unrighteous seeking righteousness. Rather, it's describing those who are justified as those who pursue what is right. And we could describe it this way, or translate it this way. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst after uprightness. They have a strict sense of justice, a strict sense of what's right and wrong. And the one who pursues righteousness, this strict sense isn't something that bothers him first about other people, but he pursues this for himself. He's upright. He has a personal concern for holiness, for sanctification. He's a godly man. And as you get to know him, you see that he's a man without guile who pursues godliness. The words of Paul in 1 Corinthians here. Paul says, I showed to you. And the one who hungers and thirsts after righteousness. What's that? The way of love. So that's the first group. When we think of these as marks of grace, of how God's blessing will show itself in should be in the area of Christian character. Here's our difference to the world. Here's where the antithesis will show difference to the and yet too often this is not our focus. We like to live comparative Christianity. We like to vex ourselves, as I put it this morning, with all the wrongs of society and all the wrongs that others are doing. And far from our mind is poverty in spirit, mourning over sin, meekness, and pursuing righteousness. And yet these should be our spiritual priorities. And this is the way we should think of spiritual growth. In these categories, poverty in spirit, mourning, have you grown? Have you grown? Is it your desire to grow in these areas? As we leave the sacrament tonight, let's growth in our lives. Then there's a second group, three more characteristics mentioned in verses 7 through 9, which describe blessed from the point of view of to others. Mercy is pity, which identifies with the miserable, and love, which reaches out to the helpless. Mercy is compassion and kindness. It's understanding the plight of another and then doing something to help them. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. It's, of course, is God. cannot understand what mercy is or show mercy. Kindness towards us in giving his son on the cross. Out of that mercy comes our mercy. Blessed are the merciful. And then blessed are the pure in heart. To have a pure heart is to have a heart that has one undivided purpose, a heart that's true. A heart that's loyal. A heart that's not divided. It's what Jesus describes later in the Sermon on the Mount, chapter, having a single eye. It has to do with not being slanderous and manipulative. Relationships. This is described for us in Psalm 15. The great question at the beginning of Psalm 15, Lord, who dwell in thy holy hill? The answer, he that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness, and then this, and speaketh the truth in his heart. It is to be pure in heart, to speak the truth. And then how does that show itself? He that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor doeth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he sweareth not to his own hurt, or he sweareth to his own hurt, and changeth not. Loyal. Not someone who's nice to your face and slanderous behind your back. Pure in heart. And then finally, blessed are meet. A peacemaker is not someone now who mediates peace between two who are at war, not first of all that, but the peacemaker is the one who seeks peace relationship, who pursues reconciliation. In he considers himself and he confesses faults. She's ready to cover a multitude of sins. Who, when evil is done against him, knows how to overcome with good. And so you see the blessed man. You see how the blessed man him to be. It's not just what he says, but it's his character. We want to grow in sanctification. We want to grow in Christian values, which will soon develop into moralism and legalism. But mercy, loyalty, and peace. What's obedience? It is to love God and to love your neighbor. And while God is certainly worthy of our love, the neighbor isn't. And here's the blessed to love the unworthy. And here's how the Christian will show himself different to the world. By this shall all men know that you're my disciples, that you have love one for another. As we leave the sacrament, that's an important point of application for us. One of the symbols in the sacrament is this, that we are one body. Take of one bread and one wine. And we are partakers of Christ. We are one in Him. And that's how we ought to see one another in the church. And with that perspective, we ought to show mercy, be loyal, and seek peace. There is, here in the attributes, a promise of blessing as well. Not just the blessing in the characteristics that Jesus describes as the blessed life, but there's a blessing that's added, a double blessing in the Beatitudes. In the first part, blessed are they that mourn. Well, this is what God, by His grace, makes us to be. And that's the way of happiness, true, lasting joy. But blessed are they that mourn, and then adds four. And the second blessing, for they shall be comforted. And He does this with each of the seven Beatitudes here. Now, from an earthly point of view, there's no glamour to being one of these citizens of the kingdom of heaven. In fact, in the verses that follow, verses 10 through 12, Jesus says that this is what you can expect. You'll be persecuted for righteousness' sake. You'll be reviled. People will say all manner of evil against you falsely. You'll be slandered for my sake. In that, He says, rejoice and be exceeding glad, because this is the way of blessedness as well. But you see, the world that rejects Christ the King will also reject His followers. And we, as citizens of the kingdom of heaven, should expect to share in His suffering. Jesus says, if they persecuted me, they'll persecute you. In fact, He says, if they hate you, it's because it's me. And so in this world, He says, you shall have tribulation. But fear not, He says, I've overcome the world. And it is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And that's the promise that Jesus holds out in these Beatitudes. He does this at the beginning of His ministry, when first His disciples begin to follow Him. Before Him and His ministry, He says to them, as citizens of the kingdom of heaven, expect two things. Expect the opposition of the world, but expect also the kingdom. As heirs of the kingdom, expect the kingdom. Now, as you look at these promises, at these Beatitudes, you see that all of them, except the first one, so verse 4, they shall be comforted. That's future. Verse 5, they shall inherit the earth. That's future. Verse 6, they shall be filled. 7, they shall obtain. They shall see God. 9, they shall be called the children of God. Future. But the first one is present. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now that's because the six flow out of the one. The future tense ones here flow out of the first, that the kingdom is theirs. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Not there shall be, but there is. And he means it is now. Because as Jesus says in John chapter 3, born again, we have entered into the kingdom. You cannot enter the kingdom except you're born again. And Jesus means this, born again, you have entered the kingdom. We have become citizens of this kingdom. We have come into possession of the kingdom. We have come into possession of the riches and the glory and the inheritance that is ours in this kingdom. All the kingdom are ours in regeneration. And that helps us to understand the future tense here. The future doesn't mean that these are things that we'll have to wait to possess. Jesus is not saying here, blessed are they that mourn now, be comforted in the future when they come to heaven, though that's true in an ultimate sense, but he doesn't mean we have to wait to be comforted. He doesn't mean that we have to wait to be filled or that we have to wait to No, he means as citizens of the kingdom, these are the blessings that you will enjoy. Have entered the kingdom. And having entered the kingdom, God will bring us comfort. Having entered the kingdom and hungering and thirsting, we shall be filled. As we show mercy, we will obtain mercy. As we're pure in heart, God. As we live in peace, we will know children of God. That's the idea. A double blessing. Rewarding the grace that is given to us, which forms us into this character. Well, these characteristics, God rewarding that grace with more grace. Grace, grace. This morning in the sacrament, what did he do? Faith. And that's how God operates. What a marvelous and gracious God. And I want to close with that thought tonight as we think about these double blessings in the Beatitudes. When we say we are blessed, we're saying something about God. We're saying something about God. Yesterday, someone sent a quote to me from John Calvin. Quote, if we say that God is good and gracious to his people, we say something about who God is that the wicked cannot confess willingly. If we confess that God delights in forgiving the sins of his people, we must also include ourselves as counted among the forgiven. You understand what he's saying? He's saying if we say that God is good and gracious and forgiving, we can only say that by grace. The wicked don't want that kind of God. That's a beautiful thought, isn't it? If we say we are blessed, we're saying that God delights in blessing. That's what we're saying about God. God delights in blessing. And he delights, as we read each of these Beatitudes, he blesses us, and then he blesses us again. And so this morning we saw, blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven. Blessed is he whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord imputes not his sin. We're saying, and his delight to forgive sin. And so here too, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are they that mourn, blessed are the meek, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the pure in heart, blessed are the peacemakers. God bless us with these characteristics, these attributes. And then God adds to this all the blessings and all the joy of life in his kingdom and of being the privileged who are those who inherit the kingdom. A God who blesses. Indeed, He is the overflowing fountain of all good. Amen.